travels o' mine. If you're a fan of film noir and pulp fiction, I read a book you may be interested in called Let the Dog Drive by David Bowman. It's imaginative, funny, and a bit obtuse in true noir style. That's Let the Dog Drive by David Bowman. Speaking of written, this show is about handwriting, which a younger contingent of the population believes is no longer necessary. One claim being that signatures are being replaced with digital signatures. Don't you have to write your signature first and then digitize it? I suppose they also think fingerprinting will replace them. Flashes of bad futuristic sci-fi movies. Now, one argument pro-handwriting pointed out that if you don't learn it, you won't be able to read the Declaration of Independence. Truth. Now, I usually print more than use cursive for the sake of those who need to read it. However, if I need to take notes, cursive is faster, presumably because the letters are connected, you don't lift up the pen or pencil. I suppose that's why many people prefer the swipe option on their smartphone's keypad. Handwriting taps the creative part of the brain in a deeper, tactile way that typing simply can't. I definitely need my laptop when my thought processes are running at warp speed and I couldn't write them down fast enough. However, when using a pen or pencil to paper, the brain literally processes differently, thereby creating different ideas. I spoke with Fonda Moore, who, among other things, privately teaches handwriting to children at the request of their parents. Tell me about your name, Fonda. Is it that how it's pronounced, Fonda?
Yes, Fonda, like Jane Fonda. And my name is Cherokee. I'm an eighth. And my middle name is Faye. The first name, Fonda, means profound. And Faye means faith. So I try to live up to that.
No pressure.
Exactly.
So tell me about your Cherokee background and how you were given that name.
Well, I don't know much about the background except that I've seen photos of my full-blooded Cherokee grandmother. She was actually my great-grandmother, and she had the long black braid down her back and the serious face like they all did in those days, the high cheekbones. And there's a whole group of other nationalities in the family. There's Scotch, German, Swedish, and Jewish. So lots of different nationalities. Like a lot of us. Heinz 57.
But higher quality, some of us.
Oh, perhaps.
That's what we're going to go with.
Okay.
I remember in seventh grade, I believe it was, my girlfriends and I were all trying to improve our handwriting so it didn't look like the boys. And this was in the 60s, so we were doing things like dotting our I's. We'd make flowers,
yes.
You know, for the dot.
Yes.
Smiling faces. And if it was printing the letter E, it would look like a C, but it'd have a sideways slash.
The Greek E, yes. Yes.
That didn't last very long. To this day, my P's, both printed and handwritten, is in a style that was with one of my classmates, Kim Webb. I love the way she did her P, and I still do it. It had a loop at the bottom.
Yes.
And we all tried to do something fancy with our names. So my nickname was Spanky, because I had big cheeks like Spanky in our game. And so I would write out Spanky, and then the Y, I would do the tail of it, would hang down, and then would go backwards the length of the name.
Mm-hmm.
And that was trying to be fancy. We were all trying to do fancy things.
Yeah.
And I just think how sad that handwriting, which not only identifies individual personalities and forgeries, etc., but it also reflects personalities.
Yeah.
And as a personal historian, when you read your ancestors' letters and you can actually look at their handwriting, their personality, the moods, what was going on with them during that time, over a period of time, it's very insightful. And I just think it's very sad that we're losing that.
I agree. Handwriting is very expressive and very individualistic. I've actually had my handwriting analyzed, and I would agree totally with the report. It was very interesting. It was a woman I had never met and just did it on a professional basis. I sent her a sample, and she returned the report to me, and I just went down the checklist that she gave me, and then she wrote another probably full page of traits that she had picked up on. It was like looking in a mirror, but not with another person to read this report. It was very interesting.
It's also interesting that my grandmother had a very specific handwriting style. I had interviewed another woman who was showing me a couple of letters that her deceased husband had kept when they exchanged letters. And I commented on my observation that, oh, this looked just like my dad's mom's handwriting. And she said, oh, well, that was some type of style that they learned. And they just stuck with it. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any, like I had, wanted to change and make something unique to reflect me. They just followed the status quo.
Yes.
So that's also a little insightful, I would say.
It is. People sometimes, even in calligraphy, in a professional sense, they take the standard instruction. I see this in my students where every student receives the same handout. They receive the same lecture. Sometimes I do a PowerPoint presentation with the history of lettering. And yet, when we incorporate that into our own creativity, we see some individual style that is very interesting. I just taught a class in Mendocino, and we did some drawing, we did color, we did layout, and all of the journals, it was artistic journaling, and all of the journals had a very distinctive individualistic look. And so like you've explained with your handwriting and relatives, you recognize a person's handwriting, especially a relative or someone close to you. And that's very dear when they're no longer with us. We leave that behind for them.
My other grandmother, on the other hand, was very artistic. And when she and my grandfather were exchanging letters, he had joined the Navy. He left high school early. And because she was artistic, she created her own handwriting. It looks as if you had printed it from a computer. And so she harassed him because his handwriting was up to her standards. You could read this in the letters as they wrote back and forth because they kept them, and pretty much pressured him to change his handwriting. And his handwriting, as a result, was beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, but again, unique to him. So I know I'm not alone in this concern about the Common Core now saying that we're no longer going to teach handwriting. Do you know the backstory of that?
I don't know a lot about it, but I do have a background in education. I work with a lot of educators, not only for teaching, they're my students, but I've worked for the Placer County Office of Education and the State Chancellor's Office for the community colleges. So in my role there, in my job there, I did legislative reports, and I was there at a time where the budgets were a serious problem, and our reports had to explain what we did with the funding that we received for different community college programs. So I was aware of some of the cuts, and of course, sort of felt really badly when those cuts affected art, music, and then, as we know today, handwriting in the Common Core standards. So I am aware of it from that perspective, and I'm aware of it from the perspective that when I have a student who's been a teacher and we all talk about the fact that handwriting is no longer required, we are unanimously can't believe that it isn't considered important because we all think it is important. So one instructor explained to me that it simply boiled down to a matter of time. And I think what parents can do in this regard is to take up that desire to have their children have a nice handwriting for many reasons in life, because it is definitely a part of being educated. It's more than that, it's a part of being communicative and succeeding in the business world, as well as delighting in relationships where you can design a nice card or send a nice note, and just common practice of humanity, of human beings talking to each other and communicating with each other.
And what about the issue of signing legal documents?
You know, I'm not an expert on that, but I know from when I had some hand surgery that I was amazed at how my check sailed through with a little X at the bottom, and they didn't seem to even need my signature. So those cards that we fill out at the bank may not be used much, you know, in a serious way when they don't have to be.
But we have to sign for our driver's license.
Exactly.
We have to sign for our Social Security.
Yes.
So there are other legal documents besides the bank.
Yes.
That set us apart back in the day, serious day,
an X was only required if there was a witness, but that's not always the case. So I'm just wondering now, is every legal document going to have to be notarized, including the DMV? And
it does make you wonder. I don't know. Yeah. I just try to keep people on the side of keeping handwriting alive, but I don't know what happens to it in individual cases or legal cases, you know, where they may make their own decision for it or against it.
I'm looking down the road thinking, well, okay, I don't use my handwriting that often anyway. I use it once in a while just to see if I remember how to do it. But it uses a part of your brain differently when you do handwriting versus printing. I mean, you can physically feel the difference, your thought processes and the blood flow. I know it's not just my imagination. I'm sure other people have experienced that as well. Tell me how parents find out about what you do, about your services to help them learn handwriting, their children's handwriting.
To comment first on the research, there's a lot of research online about the connection between eye-hand coordination and the brain. And it's been proven that there is more brain activity when we are writing, when we're drawing and writing and activating that connection, that unity. It's not the same as keying letters or words in on a keyboard. That's a different process and doesn't actually activate as much brain activity as the handwriting does. So for that reason alone, we see more success in students, in academic success, and just in life success that handwriting produces. And there are other creative projects as well that do this.
And even the writing instrument, the fine point, the thick point, mm-hmm. ballpoint versus the ink. It's interesting to me. I think that's kind of insightful. I've met a couple of gentlemen at networking events that will pull out the old ink pens, and I had to go out and buy one because I love the fine point.
Yes.
There's something about that for me that it seems to, less is more, I guess, for me.
Yes.
Have you found that it provides some insight into children when they're learning how to write, if they have a choice of writing implements as far as...
Oh, yes. In fact, when I've taught children, I taught in the Lodi area for 8 years, and we worked with public schools, private schools, and then a recreation department. And I personally was very surprised that children really respond to the tools that you mentioned, whether it be a pencil, a pen. They respond to the colors of ink or of paint that they're using. We've done projects with them in collaboration where one student chooses a certain color, one student chooses a tool, and they each make a part of letters. And these are art collaboration projects that are beautiful, and there's one over there, in fact, that I'll show you. And the children work very well as a team if they're younger. I've worked with students that were incarcerated in the same situation, and surprisingly, they did not have that ability to collaborate with each other. They were in juvenile hall and had just kind of lost that wonderful creative spirit, which was very sad. The younger children delight in, like in the letter A, one student would make a diagonal line to the left, the next student might make the crossbar, a third student would make the finishing stroke of the letter, and they all enjoy seeing each other's contribution to the whole project. It's a very wonderful thing that they can do.
Does it provide any insight to the personality? For instance, if one selects a thick pen or a thick felt pen over, like myself, something more fine and delicate.
It probably does. I'm not an expert on that, but...
just observation.
Yeah, in general, I think children tend to be more responsive to color. I mean, more as a group. But there's certainly that individual preference, like you and I have with the fine points on pens. I like the 0.05 size, very fine. It also probably depends on the size of handwriting. If you have very small handwriting, you will probably be more inclined to look at the finer pens, and bolder handwriting might go for the larger size. So that's all an individual preference. And I think what we're really describing here is it's very pleasurable to write. I see this in children. They enjoy making letters. They enjoy drawing. And adults, if they haven't lost that creative interest, which is only present in about 2 to 8% of adults, whereas most children have high 90s. There have been studies, George Land did a study on handwriting and creativity and identified that many children are born with this, most children in fact, and then as they go through adult life, it's lost and it's very sad. That's actually what explains happened to the children in juvenile hall. They had lost that ability to be creative through life experiences.
So have you worked, you mentioned earlier, children that have been incarcerated. Have you worked with them in juvenile hall?
I did one assignment when I was with Placer County Office of Education. I've also worked with grieving children with Sutter Health in the art therapy program that they had. And I think they still have it. Actually, I worked with them a few years back. I've worked with gifted children and children in recreation departments and public schools.
So how do you approach public schools insofar as your services are concerned?
I haven't actually, I think about it sometimes, but I know from experience in working with educators that that's just not a priority for them right now. So down the road, I'm hoping for an opportunity, a window to open that, you know, would include my services and go from there. I know the interest is there for the parents. I get calls from parents. In fact, this class that we're offering in Carmichael is a direct result from my students who are parents and wanted to be sure that their children learned handwriting because they weren't being taught. It wasn't being taught in their school anymore.
Well, that's what I was wondering, how the parents found out about your services. How do they learn about it?
They're my students.
Right.
Yeah. So they come to learn calligraphy. I teach at the Crocker at University Art at Sac Fine Arts Center. At some point in time, we're studying history of letters or we're studying different styles, and they enjoy it, and they want their children to be able to have that same experience.
Is there anything online as far as resources for those who want to learn handwriting and they're part of the world?
I don't know of any online classes. I'm not a big believer in online classes for children. I think the human interaction is much more effective. I think you can accomplish more by having a teacher watch you one-on-one and see how you're holding the pen, how you're working with your paper, is it slanted, is it straight? There's also a small percentage of the population, as you know, that's left-handed, so we can help those students. I don't help them as much as I could if I were left-handed because I'm right-handed, but from time to time I have had left-handed students and they have the same desire to have nice handwriting and be creative as the right-handed students. And we can usually find a way to have that happen.
Well, I'm thinking of, say, South Africa, and it's a small village and they don't have the resources. I was just wondering if there's something online that they could, the teachers, educators in that area could maybe download and use in their classrooms.
I really don't know. I only know about the online research that supports handwriting, and there might be teachers who teach handwriting in school that if they couldn't continue doing so might have gone to an online option. I'm not familiar with it though.
Could you give me an example of an art collaboration with letters? What would they do exactly?
Sure. We did a project for the Placer County Office of Education for a holiday card. And the words that were chosen were hope, peace, and joy. So I worked with a group of about 8 to 12 students in a couple of different school settings. And one of the groups was a third and fourth grade combination gifted class. The other group was about 12 incarcerated children. The process was the same for both groups. I brought tools like pencils, marker pens, brushes, and chisel pens. And I brought ink, paint, paper, and explained to the children that each one would use one of the tools with one of the colors for one of the strokes. So I'm looking at our assignment here, and for the word hope, one student chose a crayon in red and drew the first line down, the vertical line straight down. The next student for the cross,
letter H.
For the letter H. The next student for the crossbar drew almost a squarish rectangle in blue in a different tool. This looked like a different kind of marker pen, a bullet pen, and then filled it in. And the third student drew the second vertical stroke and put little circles. They were kind of cute in green. And so we have a red, blue, and green H for hope. When we got to the O, they got really creative and made diamonds inside of the circle of the O. One student did a little squiggly line all inside the outline of the O. And this card was just really lovely. When I finished the work and gathered it up to take to the printer, I only had to replace one letter, and the spacing in the other letters was just about perfect. And the only reason I had to replace that letter was because in the original page, the Y had been a descender, which is what we call the lower strokes. So it came way too far into what would be occupied by text. So I just cut and pasted one Y and finished the word joy. And it was a printed card that I had designed the cover for. But the real beauty of the card was the lettering that the children had done.
So how exactly do you teach handwriting? And what ages do you usually work with?
I work best with ages 8 to 13 for handwriting. And beyond that, we continue handwriting in more of a calligraphic sense. But for the beginning, for the introduction, we try to choose tools that are familiar to the student. For example, in the beginning, the students use pencils, just your ordinary 2B pencils with the eraser, the gold ones that we all used as children. We work with graph paper so that they can see the size of their letters and make it uniform throughout the alphabet. We talk a little bit about slant, and this is mainly determined by an individual. Some people slant left, some people slant vertically or basically no slant, and then of course some slant right. We talk about the letter shapes. Traditionally, there's an egg shape, flat on the top, and then oval, which is the italic shape, more of a rounded shape, which is more Roman, and then square shapes are primarily Gothic. The students don't have to actually learn the alphabet of these shapes. They just enjoy knowing that all of these shapes exist and that they are related to the letters. And also when I talk about the history to students, we reference that the handwriting in history mimicked the architecture. So Gothic buildings were tall and square because they didn't have a lot of space to build outward, so they built up, and the letters reflect that kind of architecture. Students enjoy learning that originally people wrote with stones, they wrote with stick, anything that was available in their world. Because they had the desire to communicate, they just picked up and drew with it and wrote with it, and it worked. So some of those tools are interesting for students to try. And in fact, when I go to conferences to continue my learning of calligraphy, it's almost amusing that I'm writing with shells, rocks, twigs, brooms, yarn. We use all kinds of different things to write with because primarily, we're interested at this point in time in texture. So a string from a mop, for example, dipped in ink will give wonderful texture on paper. And if the paper is textured, so much the better. We have a lot of options for creating letters with different tools. So the students learn that kind of history, the flexibility of choosing different tools, the importance of matching the tool with the paper. And once they have the letter shapes down, for the lowercase alphabet, we then talk about joins. And the italic alphabet for handwriting is only joined by ligatures. So they learn to just make a little connecting stroke to the next letter without making loops. It's fine to pick up the pen several times during making a word. And after they feel comfortable with that, I move into capital letters, which are basically printed letters. They aren't the flourished, fancier letters, but the children enjoy making something that they're proud of, and they enjoy knowing that other people can read what they're wanting to communicate. So between those two points, it's a win-win situation.
Feeling like you wrote a mystery and somebody figured it out.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, they really, you can just see the pleasure on their face when they are writing their letters. And like we've talked about earlier, the unique contribution that each person as a human being makes to their own lettering and handwriting. That becomes apparent as they see what other students do. Whether they know them or not, it's a bond because they're both sitting there writing with the same tool. And oftentimes they'll look across the table and go, oh, what are you making? And so it's a nice bond that they have with each other.
great of brainstorming at a young age.
Yes, yes. And the project that we mentioned, the collaboration, that's amazing to see how they think. It's almost like they communicate in silence. And when one student picks up a tool and the other ones watch them, they're all very much in collaboration, even though only one student is making the letter, because the next student knows that their turn is coming. So they are in anticipation of what they will create together.
Now, do you find, or have you heard, that there is a correlation between learning these creative handwriting and an interest in reading?
There might be. I'm not personally aware of a study that would collaborate on that. But I would suggest that because of the studies that do exist that show that it enhances learning and helps the children learn more efficiently, that that would be a likely association.
Because it seems to me that their mind, their awareness is expanded.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd be more open to different writings, different genres, different books and ideas and concepts.
Exactly. And any of the projects that we do in handwriting of an artistic nature, like sometimes we will just have them, I have my adult students do this too, but sometimes we'll just take a letter shape and explore it in a positive sense, in a negative sense, in colors, different ways. And the longer they look at that shape, the easier it is for them to recognize it when they're reading. So I would say those two skills would definitely play off each other in life.
And even the old typesetting, where the first letter of a chapter or a section would be larger in a little box or not in a box,
mm-hmm.
Several times larger than the rest of the font, just to show that it's beginning a new section.
Yes, yes. It's a focal point. And those drop caps can also introduce different lettering styles that may or may not match the rest of the text. So it's a visual interest. It's a place of visual interest, and shows us, of course, where to start, but also is interesting just to look at a little longer if we want to.
My earliest memory of the drops were the books that my grandparents have, Prince Valiant, the old type of printing, publishing, mm-hmm. Back in the 20s, that's what, in medieval. Someone had given me for a present, it was a coloring book, but there was 26 pages because it's one page of each letter of the alphabet, but they were all Renaissance period or medieval period. So it was very detail oriented and lots of curlicues, and definitely put my brain in a different area. And I love that because obviously that kind of lettering is no longer existing in any of the books I had in school, let alone in my parents' stack of books to be read. And I truly believe that was just one of many ways that my parents introduced me to other aspects of learning and perspective, which I'm very grateful to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, some of the projects, when you mentioned books, I thought of another project that we did with students. And we made in our class with students that were about the same age, about 8 or 9 to 13, we made handmade books. They were simple accordion fold books, so that we took a long, wide piece of paper, folded in about 6 or 8 panels, and the children actually lettered a little verse. I believe it was about Jack and the Beanstalk. It was sort of a fairy tale story. Shorter, of course, than a real story. But they lettered it in pencil on each panel. And then we took actual leaves from the garden of growing green beans and imprinted them with green poster paint. And we even imprinted the little peas in the pods. And they really loved embellishing their writing, their simple writing at the top, with this image of the green bean plant, and then folding it, and we made little covers, and it closed with twine. I must have one around here somewhere, but it was a long time ago, but would be still very current today if a child enjoyed doing something like that.
And you could do that with very small resources. You would need to spend a lot of money with that.
Yeah, and we really do aim for, like the people way back in history, they had no money to spend on tools. They just wanted to create and to communicate. And those two desires were strong enough to notice that if they picked up a rock, they could write in the sand with it, or that a twig would give a certain look. So that desire to connect with other people is much stronger than the importance of gathering tools of different kinds. Although when I look at my studio, I have to admit, I have to try them all. I like to try all kinds of different writing tools. And yet I use the the very unusual tools for texture and for different letters as well. I've even used things like magnolia pods, pine cones, the smoothest different tools to the roughest, and it's an interesting array of extreme textures when you do that.
The other sad thing about kids not learning to write or handwrite is, you know, the texting that's going on, which is fine, it's quick, it's now, but just the simple exchange of postcards and letters and having something tangible to actually hold in your hand is very sad to me. It's just very, very sad. Even though there's that cliche that, you know, you can't miss what you never had, but once someone has been exposed to it, or say they're researching their family history and reading these old letters, and you start to realize what is being lost, but they have to be exposed to it. And that's why I think it's a travesty that handwriting is slowly being pulled out of the educational system.
I think what we can do as parents and as educators is to realize that there are groups in the world that still support the things that matter to us. One of them is the Graceful Envelope Contest, which is you can see their work online. It's a contest that is presented by the Washington Calligraphers Guild and the Post Office. And I believe the website is gracefulenvelopecontest.org, or just Google Graceful Envelope. It's in Washington, and what they do is children can submit originally designed envelopes for judging. There's no cash award. There's no money involved. It's just the pleasure of being recognized. And these envelopes are then displayed in, I believe it's the Post Office back there. And they have different age levels that children can compete in. And even though part of the contest is also for adults, what's really delightful is to see the winning entries for the children. And I was in Alaska last summer, and the Iditarod racers, the mushers, also have an envelope addressing contest where they will carry a hand-addressed envelope for their journey with their dogs. And they had those on display at one of the gift stores. And they were just really darling. They were hand-lettered and hand-illustrated with the dogs. And this is a really special part of their activities. So I think if we really stretch ourselves and keep looking online and join calligraphy groups, there's usually, I belong to three, there's different groups all over the country. We can fulfill that need and share information that we have to keep this going.
FYI, Girls Love Mail is an organization that gives the gift of handwritten letters to newly diagnosed breast cancer patients who are going through treatment. In fact, they offer party kits if you want to get a group together for a letter writing party. That's girlslovemail.com. Do something different. For a housewarming gift, how about a planter box, soil, and vegetable seeds?